That said, let's get into it. Dr. Alexander Wissner-Gross is here. He is a research affiliate at the MIT Media Lab, and he's also founded, managed, and advised 5 technology companies, authored 14 publications, and holds 9 patents. In 1998, as a high school student, he won the U.S. Computer Olympiad and represented the United States at the International Olympiad in Informatics. In 2003, he graduated first in his class from MIT with a triple major from the School of Engineering. In 2007, he completed his PhD in physics from Harvard, and his research on smart matter, pervasive computing, and machine learning was awarded the Hertz Doctoral Thesis Prize. His work has been featured in Scientific American and the New York Times, among many other publications. Today, he will discuss how superhuman artificial intelligence could emerge from quantitative finance and high-frequency trading. Please welcome Dr. Alexander Wissner-Gross.
Thank you, Nathan. Thank you. Good morning, everyone. Okay, some people are awake. So this morning I'm going to talk about a sort of novel perspective on how an intelligence explosion could ultimately occur that may be a little bit different from the narrative some of you are used to hearing. So, two questions I'll explore a little bit during this talk. The first is, what would a superhuman AI look like in the context of today's industries? The second is, what lessons could we learn for managing a variety of intelligence explosions? So, let's think a little bit about which industries overall are most incentivized to produce superhuman artificial intelligence. Now, I think there's a strong argument that the two overall industrial sectors that are most strongly incentivized are quantitative finance and quantitative advertising. Quantitative finance, because the ultimate quantitative finance machine would be an outstanding group mind model for humans. And quantitative advertising, because the ultimate advertising machine would be able to model the human mind in order to reverse engineer how best to sell to that human. So between these two options, I think quantitative finance is by far, it's a much larger industry, and in general, there's a much longer tradition of applying the latest techniques in machine learning and artificial intelligence to modeling human group behavior, as well as human individual behavior. And I think probably the most important point, and a point that I don't hear often enough, is that if you buy the concept that artificial intelligence of varying strengths is likely to emerge as a result of an economic process, then it follows that that AI is also going to be economically coupled to humans. So you can talk about a variety of different analogies. One of my favorite analogies is, even if AIs are very different, ultimately operating on orders of magnitude differences in space and time, that we'll still see some sort of economic coupling, perhaps ultimately analogous to the coupling, the survival coupling between animals and plants. So let's move the discussion forward a little bit. If we're ultimately going to see the emergence, the first emergence of superhuman artificial intelligence in the quantitative finance sector, then we can ask ourselves what would be the primary causes of such a transition. So quantitative finance, as many of you are probably aware, is in an interesting state of transition. There are a variety of macro trends that are coming to a head right now. One of those is this increasing pressure to consolidate financial markets. So I have up here a couple of examples of this recent trend towards taking high-frequency exchanges and consolidating them down to narrow locations. So taking exchanges that would have been in multiple cities around the planet and consolidating them down to individual locations that can be easily co-located with low latencies. And you can even make the point that this is what's driving new infrastructure development. So I've shown here a couple of the most interesting infrastructural developments in low latency networking now. that are being driven largely by the high-frequency trading subsector. And this, if you think about it, it's truly remarkable. We're driving this sort of networking fabric around the Earth's surface, not using any of a number of sort of typical AI-type applications. It's actually finance that's driving the direction of this fabric that's being built. So you can see here Chicago to New York and New York to London. New York to London is a really interesting connection. And if you actually look at what the network latencies that are being offered, so you have about, for example, for New York to London, 60 milliseconds round-trip delay, the networks are actually within a pretty tight percentage of the physical limits of light traveling through optical fiber. And this is completely remarkable to me as a physicist that finance is what's driving us to the limits set by special relativity for passing information around on our Earth's surface. And so it's natural to start to think about what happens next. If we're bumping up against physical limitations to make our financial systems smarter and smarter and think more and more quickly, and I'll talk a bit more about that in a few minutes, then where does this all end? And I think by asking that question, we can gain some insight into what any possible superhuman intelligence that might emerge from the financial sector might look like. So the problem that most of the sector experiences at the high-frequency end is that you're limited by the speed of light at either end of the pipe. And so a lot of energy and a lot of resources go into optimizing latencies at either end with a variety of technologies. And so we can visualize the sorts of interactions that happen in finance as fundamentally space-time processes. This didn't always make sense. So in the transition from Newton's model of classical mechanics to Einstein's special relativity, we had to discard the concept of absolute simultaneity. It turns out that not everyone has the same concept of simultaneity, and this is what's now happening in finance, that it's far ahead of many other industrial sectors in that you have to start thinking about events that are happening on the Earth's surface as space-time events. It's not sufficient to just think about them as being uniformly and universally temporally ordered. So what I'm showing here schematically is what would have to happen if you want to coordinate trading in more than one exchange. So if you have two securities and the securities are fluctuating due to a variety of noisy processes that are informing pricing decisions both locally and globally, then often multiple prices will get out of sync and there will be an opportunity to perform an arbitrage transaction where one security gets bought, another one gets sold, and then after some length of time, this dual transaction gets unwound and the net profit that results from having the spread from bridging this gap ultimately becomes profit. So this is a very old model for financial trading. What's new here is that since we're approaching the special relativistic limit, and I'll talk more shortly about the implications for intelligence overall, there's this very strong financial pressure to actually go and see if we can do better than the speed of light. And so it turns out that we can do better than the speed of light in a very prescriptive sense. So this is the result of a paper I published last year with my colleague Cameron Freer in Physical Review. And it turns out that you can, in a certain sense, actually make all of these coordinated transactions effectively happen faster than the speed of light. Now, causality is never violated, and information, classical information, never actually travels faster than the speed of light. But what you can always do is you can coordinate transactions to make the ultimate pattern of events look as if the speed of light was passed. So there's this old analogy in physics that if you have runway lights, for example, that are lighting progressively, that you can give the illusion that information is being passed down that set of runway lights faster than speed of light simply by coordinating their lighting to make it look like they're lighting in a succession faster than the speed of light. So it's sort of a similar idea here, that by placing coordinating computers at geographic positions in between multiple markets, we can coordinate their overall activity up to 2 times as quickly as would be required if you required round-trip information transmission in order to coordinate these complete transactions. A perhaps better and more neuromorphic analogy is that of reflex arcs. So if this podium is hot and I touch this with my finger, I'll withdraw my finger before I process the pain sensation in my brain, because the pain signal only needs to travel to my spinal column, get turned around, back to my finger, and I withdraw my finger before I feel pain. And I think this is a sort of a really interesting metaphor for thinking about predecessors to intelligence, autonomic systems in general. And so the system that you're looking at here is, in some sense, the predecessor, the autonomic predecessor to building an intelligent network fabric around the Earth's surface, which is, surprisingly, being driven by the financial industry. So I'll just run through these slides quickly. We can formalize all of these notions and ask ourselves, okay, so if we know that we're going to coordinate global transactions by placing new infrastructure in new locations, where is this infrastructure going to go? So this is a bit more quantitative. We can model the fluctuations in securities prices using any number of models. This is one popular model, a Vasicek model, where you have some noise term and you also have a decay term. So the big picture, the qualitative picture, is if you have two securities that are fluctuating up and down, then over the long term, if they're correlated, they'll revert back to some common mean. But over the short term, they're driven by independent noise processes, and that presents the opportunity for arbitrage. And so with relatively simple assumptions and plugging in the fact that we're now talking about space-time events rather than events that are co-located in space and just varying in time, it's possible, and this was one of the key results of the paper, it's possible to derive the universal solution shown at the very bottom of this slide for where to position yourself in the world to coordinate trading activity between any two other locations. So I think this is totally remarkable in the sense that the first term depends only on aggregate market characteristics, and the second term depends on instantaneous characteristics, such as price and price velocity. But you can actually, as Feynman said, shut up and calculate. You can take this and turn this into a map. So this is a map of the Earth's surface. The red dots represent the locations of the largest equities exchanges as of 2008. And the blue dots, one blue dot for every pair of red dots, represent an optimal geographic location for coordinating trading between any two of those red dots. And it's remarkable that many of these locations happen to be in network-sparse areas. Many of them are in the oceans. And so you can ask the question, what would a superhuman financial AI look like? And I think this is a step towards the answer, that there have long been notions floating around that superhuman AI would be faster in a temporal sense. This generalizes that concept to suggest, in fact, we might see the emergence of intelligences that are not only much faster than we are temporally, but also physically much larger, maybe even the size of our planet, or at least sufficiently distributed across the Earth's surface that they're effectively the size of our planet. So this is one, I would say, sort of novel vision for what superhuman AI could look like. Can we learn anything else from quantitative finance? So I would posit that there's a second set of lessons that we can learn, and that is, if you buy the concept that AI has a decent chance of emerging from the quantitative finance sector, you can also look to that sector for guidance on how to manage intelligence explosions in general. And once you go down that line of reasoning, it's actually pretty self-evident, I would say, that there's been a long history now. We have several decades of experience with managing the financial equivalent of hard takeoffs. And we're still learning as a civilization how to do that. But let me give you a couple of my favorite dualities here. So I'll map this between quantitative finance strategies and AGI strategies. Here's the first one. So there's a CFTC suggestion out there now that we should see pre-trade testing of algorithms. This is an interesting proposal, but the AGI generalization is, I think, pretty clear. So we could, for example, do source code and binary testing above a certain level of intelligence. Second, dark pools. So dark pools, as a result of high-frequency trading, are gaining popularity already. You could call this an example of self-regulation or the market adjusting. So dark pools shield the participants from seeing the detailed transactions that other participants are making in the market. And as a result, they prevent certain sorts of trading behavior. And one might look at this as the financial equivalent of Werner Vinge's Zones of Thought. For those of you who are familiar with his series of novels, they artificially level the playing field between less intelligent or slower intelligences and higher intelligences or faster intelligences. Third point, so the large trader rule. So this is an SEC rule from July of this year. So the notion here is that quantitative trading funds over a certain size or a certain trading volume have to register not only their own existence, but the entire org charts of all the humans who work within the organization. And I think it's absolutely conceivable that if AI continues to develop, that at some point in the future we could see the equivalent of a central registry, perhaps the AI equivalent of the nuclear regulatory agency that we have in this country, and that we'd see a central registry of artificial intelligences where we have detailed records not only of the AI's history, but of all the humans who would come into contact and who are responsible for managing it. Fourth, market circuit breakers. So we hear a lot about these now, especially post-flash crash. And the notion of having centralized circuit breakers when the market starts to misbehave, I think, is another concept that generalizes quite well to the management of AI, perhaps even hard takeoff scenarios. So the natural generalization here is that we could have centralized ability to turn off environmental, physical, digital, outside world interactions. One more example, swap data repositories. So this was part of the Dodd-Frank Act. And the notion here is let's build the equivalent of black box recorders for the activities of, in the financial case, we're talking about largely hedge funds, but on the more general side, build a central repository of all the activity, all the interactions between AIs and the outside physical or digital worlds, so that A, we can monitor in real time, but B, if something goes wrong, we'll hopefully have the opportunity to do a deeper analysis to understand what that interaction was. One last one. The short-term gains, short-term capital gains tax. This is a notion that's pretty persistently floated within financial regulatory circles, most recently by the EC. And the equivalent here would be to consider some form of soft boundary or tax on bandwidth between AIs and the outside physical or digital worlds. So, at least if the AI is running up a big bandwidth bill coordinating activity in the outside world, there will be the opportunity to throttle that back by soft means. And so looking at this list, what I find especially striking is that without realizing it, we may effectively be seeing, vis-a-vis the financial sector, the first wave of AI regulation. And I think this is a pretty provocative concept that's worth thinking more deeply about if indeed finance is to be properly treated as the petri dish for understanding what living in a world with superhuman intelligence might look like. Then we can also look to the financial industry for at least some level of guidance in how we might want to go about managing hard takeoff scenarios to make sure that we have enough time for a softer takeoff to occur. So with that, I'll take questions.
First question over here on the right.
How exactly do you envision intelligence emerging from the financial markets? Our intelligence was a result of environmental pressures over millions of years. What environmental pressures will cause intelligence to emerge in your scenario?
So it's no secret that the financial world experiences the same selective pressures that you see in many other domains. There are scarce resources, there are scarce dollars in the ecosystem, and Darwinism is absolutely ubiquitous within the financial sector. So the ability to better model human group behavior, if you can build a model tomorrow for aggregate human behavior and understand the market better than anyone else can, then you can corner the market. And that is ultimately the selection pressure, that finance may be conceivable as the ultimate AI prize, or at least the ultimate human mind modeling prize.
On the left, about three quarters of the way back.
Hey, where do you think the regulation on AI will come from? Do you think it'll come from corporate interest, or do you think it will come from grassroots organizations?
That's a great question. So my personal suspicion is that it won't come from the grassroots. My personal suspicion, based on what I've seen happen in the financial industry, is that regulation will actually be pushed most heavily by companies in the industry, and that there will be a lot of pressure. It's not clear beyond the financial industry what those companies will be, but I'm reasonably confident that they will emerge from the woodwork, companies that perhaps are trying to compete with the leading edge of AI in whatever other industry we're talking about, will probably be responsible for pushing those regulations most heavily and not the end consumers.
Hi, Claudia Somm from the Federal Reserve Board.
Yes.
So this was the first time I've ever heard of finance as a first example of AI, so it's very interesting. To be quite honest, though, it makes me really worry about the dark side of the singularity. You're talking about having worked at the board the last 4 years and kind of watched what all happened. I was really interested, and I was really happy to see you go through a slide of like regulation and things about kind of trying to manage what's coming. Instead of trying to shut it down, like trying to make it a positive force. But I did have a comment about one of the regulations you talked about, one of the policies, these dark pools.
Yes.
Because
yeah. So dark pools, to be clear, are, I would say, not a form of top-down policy. They're more a form of self-regulation.
Right. Okay, so that maybe makes my comment even
yeah.
more important. So dark pools strike me as a form of taking less transparency out. And I like the idea of leveling the playing field, but I think one thing we learned is that there's certain high intelligence or people who are motivated to make money, they're
sure.
going to figure out the rules of the game. And if things aren't transparent and you have these really interconnected systems, when something goes wrong, it can go really wrong. So I don't know, it was just a thought on the dark pools, because anything that like is less transparency just strikes me as a looking for trouble.
So this is, it's a great point. This is sort of the perpetual upside and downside of level playing fields. The upside of a level playing field is anyone can compete. The downside is, again, who's the leveler, who watches the watchers, and certainly in the case of dark pools, that's a pretty interesting, persistent question as well.
David Gland here, Casey Research. Question I have is, are you at risk of, with this AI, killing the host? Because speaking as a stock investor, I listen to your presentation and I say, God, I don't want to be at the stock market. I'm about gunned here. So is there a chance that the AI kills the host?
There's always the possibility. I wouldn't be intellectually honest if I didn't say that were not a possibility. That said, the point that I was making earlier is we want to keep this economic coupling between emerging AIs and humans as long as possible. In human political strategy, this might be called an engagement strategy. But overall, I would say that the strategy is to make sure that we're economically bound and that our mutual survival is bound up together through economic trade. And that's the solution for survival.
I think they've covered most of my questions in the last two, but I guess in general, do you see algorithmic trading as something that sort of takes prices towards fair value or operates to sort of figure out what everyone else is trying to do and do it first?
So this is obviously a hotly debated question. I think the answer is a little bit of both. It depends on specific circumstances. Sometimes speculation dominates a particular market. Ultimately, I do think that markets have the potential to be efficient. Again, it depends on which markets we're talking about. Some are obviously more efficient than others. I think it's sort of an interesting question. The sort of broader question I think you're asking is, what is the role of efficiency in dealing with these AIs? Is there a potential, for example, for a sufficient amount of intelligence to gather to cause inefficiency to become an enemy of humanity? And I think that's actually sort of an interesting question. Maybe it should be another row in that last slide that I had. Could market inefficiency become the complete dual of unfriendliness?
I have a question. How well do you really think that trying to be transparent with listing organization charts, how effective do you really think that's going to be in a world of outsourcing and, you know, freelancing with proprietary knowledge? How effective do you think it's really going to be to make it safer?
And how effective would regulation be?
Yeah, in order to actually find out who's really coding specific things.
Yeah. Again, great question. I look for guidance to nuclear nonproliferation, among other examples. And it's been, I would say, nuclear nonproliferation. And again, you could chalk the success thus far up to a variety of different designs and maybe even accidents. But it's been startlingly successful for startlingly long. And I think the overall game here is not to forestall the development of unfriendly AI forever. It's merely to buy us enough time to figure out what we're doing to make sure that we can do it safely.
There's a big difference, though, with, you know, being able to detect radiation in the nuclear industry. So that's completely different from software. Anybody with a laptop or keyboard, you know, it's all they need. So I don't see how you could possibly use that as a model.
Sure. So if you want to extend the analogy further, new techniques are obviously needed that are somewhat different from non-proliferation techniques.
Do you mean like spying on everyone with a keyboard? Are you serious?
We've got time for one more over here on the left.
David Wood from Humanity Plus UK. Yes. You talked about circuit breaking as a way in which we could stop systems behaving wrong and the risks of the flash crash. But is it always going to be obvious when the circuit should be broken? Can't you imagine the algorithm saying, hang on here, keep the nerve, this actually is going to be good? How do you actually solve these problems?
No, it's a fine point. So circuit breaker rules are far from permanent. They're updated. They've been updated multiple times. So I would expect that the rules for conditions under which one might want to circuit break all the AIs out there might be a more dynamic decision-making process.
Unfortunately, that's all the time we have. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Dr. Alexander Wisnogross. Great job.
Thanks.